We're here at the 12th International Dialogue on Population and Sustainable Development, IPCD and Beyond, Investing in Health and Rights. I'm joined by Zain Dangor, who is currently serving as advisor to the South African Minister for Social Development, and Samuel Kisi, a youth advocate and development consultant based in Accra. He focuses primarily on youth, sexual and reproductive health and rights. Mr. Dangor, Mr. Kisi, thank you for joining me.
Happy to be here.
That's good to be here.
Now, Lola Dara just touched on the disconnect between capitals and New York, and it was also part of the open session, which you both participated in, the open space session that you both participated in. I'd be interested in your experience.
Well, I think this is true, that there has been for some time a recognition that capitals and their missions based in New York or Geneva or regional headquarters in Addis Ababa or wherever do not always seem to sing from the same hymn book. And the challenge has been how to fix that. So we've had lots of discussions almost on a yearly basis before these processes begin. But the discussions are always very close to, say, a CPD or CSW. We don't seem to have come a long way in addressing that. So it's important that this issue came up again in this dialogue. And I think we've had quite some discussion around the various factors that come into play which result in this phenomenon.
When speaking specifically about SRHR, how are you seeing this particular dynamic affect negotiations?
I think the point is that if we take the African continent, we've got very good regional documents. For example, in SRHR, the African position has been in advance of anything that has been in the UN system for a very long time. You know, the Maputo Protocol talks very explicitly about sexual and reproductive health and rights, and has a number of factors that seeks to ensure that women and adolescents access their rights. Similarly, last year, at the highest level, really, negotiated the Addis Declaration, which dealt with the post-2015 development issues and SRHR. Again, by ministers signed off by heads of state, but what you find is that rather relatively junior officials, if one excludes ambassadors who often don't engage in negotiations, have distanced themselves from these documents. And this disconnect is one that is not about, it's about people not being accountable to national positions and even regional positions. And we can try and excuse it in many possible ways, but it's actually not acceptable, because what it does is it robs African women from the rights to services that they actually deserve. Because we're not sure to what extent what is being communicated in New York results into a lack of delivery at national levels.
Were there any standout ideas for solutions to this problem, speaking specifically to SRHR?
I think one is the recognition that in many places there is a real issue of capacity, and capacity both within some of the missions and also within civil society. So we need to work on increasing capacity, helping people to understand what their country positions actually is. And I know that there were some debates about what a country's position is, but from my perspective, if you have laws and policies at country level, that is obviously a guide. If you are implementing programs from a national perspective, then that obviously indicates where your country leans. And we find that too often there are people doing these negotiations who are not aware of these things that are happening at country level, or some people also in civil society are not fully aware what exactly their country's laws and policies and even practices to some extent is. So capacity is a big issue. I think Zain touched on the issue of accountability quite a lot, and that is clearly an issue where these people who represent the government are able to say whatever they want and get away with it because there is really no accountability mechanism in place. So there is no consequence for whatever they say. So they decide to make interventions based on their own personal convictions, sometimes based on misinformation, because other civil society people in New York or wherever, Addis Ababa, Geneva, wherever the case, whatever the case may be, may have contacted them and misinformed them about many things. So there is that. There is also the bit about poor communication between missions and their capitals. And we know that just from observation, there are some countries that do that very well. I could name a few, South Africa, even Egypt, who is not usually or almost never really supportive of SRH issues. But they have a very good system in place where they take directives from capital and all their spokespersons are consistent. You can say the same for South Africa. You can say the same for some of the European countries. But the majority of countries do not have this. So the position tends to be really dependent on who is sitting in the chair. And that is the problem that we want to address.
Now, you just spoke about South Africa there, and I would like to turn to you, Mr. Dangor, and speak specifically about South Africa's very special position. South Africa is quite vocal on SRHR, and I'd be interested how, if there are any plans to, or how South Africa can reach out to other African nations.
Look, you must understand why South Africa is vocal on these issues. South Africa experienced immense levels of oppression under the previous system and under the previous government. So with the dawn of democracy, there was a very explicit decision. Some people call it the window, a revolutionary window, that no discrimination will take place based on gender, race, class, sex, sexual orientation whatsoever, based on past experience, and that is something that's enshrouded in the Constitution. So the constitutional negotiations actually then depicted what we're gonna do in terms of women's rights, health rights, because we were, you know, we also had the experience of being the last country in Africa, literally, to be free from colonialist or even new colonial form of oppression. And based on that, we could see what not to do in terms of developing policy. So we decided, let's build the policy that can withstand 20, 30, 40 years and build towards it. I mean, everything is not in place. So we've got the policies in place, but we're still getting towards the service delivery issues. But we wanted to make sure that from an idea perspective, it's in place. What we are doing with the rest of the continent is engaging in dialogue around why it's a good idea to have these kinds of policies in place, how it saves lives, and actually very practically talking about the fact that rights actually does make a difference in the lives of those individuals that are being oppressed. So if it's a young woman who does not get access to rights, what is the impact on her life? That's what we're demonstrating. So it's not just some kind of idea that is not practical. What happens to a transgendered individual who does not get the kind of documentation she requires for getting jobs when there's a clear disconnect between the way she's being treated in law in terms of classification and the way she looks and feels and thinks. Very practical stuff that we're thinking of talking to people about, because it's not just some abstract right issue. It's very practical in the lives of ordinary people. And I think that's what we want to discuss with people on the continent. So it's not a special position because of it's special because of where we come from, and that's a very powerful inspiration in terms of how we see ourselves moving forward.
I'd be interested in, Mr. Kisi, in your thoughts on that. How can cross-regional alliances be built when it comes to SRHR?
Well, I think we need to find start from the areas where we agree, and there are lots of common areas where we agree. So that has to be a good starting point, and then build from that some dialogue around the issues where we seem not to agree. Now, when you get into the basics of that, we really usually seem to come from a common place, but then get into differences when you get into the details. So I think that we can make a lot of progress by forgetting about the traditional classifications that we've had in terms of who is on the right and who is on the left, but really looking at what it is we want in the end and engaging from that point. Unfortunately, the space of a negotiation doesn't really offer the chance for such dialogue. So maybe we need to look at having certain spaces where we are not necessarily pushing towards an agreed outcome, but looking at just understanding each other a bit more and engaging within those spaces. I think we might make some more progress on some of the seemingly contentious issues, because really, when you listen to people who are opposed to many things related to SRHR, you cannot help but walk away with the feeling that a lot of it comes from misinformation and lack of understanding. And I think that is where we need to start. Then there is also the issue of the differences between advocates from the South and those from the North, and the differences in our understanding of what the priority should be. So, for instance, as an advocate from Ghana, when I'm talking about the issue of maternal mortality, I will not only look at, for instance, abortion. I want to look at abortion, but I also want to look at all the other factors that come into place in resulting in an unwanted pregnancy, the factors that come into place in terms of the health system, and looking at it from that broad perspective. Whereas advocates from another part, especially from the Western countries, would usually be interested in specific issues. So they're interested in abortion, they're interested in SRR, but then not really interested in going beyond that to look at all the different factors. That sometimes requires a lot of funding and money being invested to make sure that we have, for instance, a strong health system. Now, the case in Liberia with how Ebola has spread in that country more than any other place is just an indication of how dangerous it is to have a country that doesn't have a strong health system. And then that comes also to some discussions that actually Zane had raised earlier in this dialogue about the issue of rights versus development and how those two have been polarized, and the need for us to come to a recognition that these are issues that have to dovetail into each other. We cannot have one without the other.
Now, on the second day of this conference, the delegates are tackling the future, specifically how to ensure that SRHR is part of the emerging development framework. What I'm interested in is that rights, the final R in that, seems to be a real sticking point. So a lot of people can get on board with sexual and reproductive health, and maybe not rights, or at least people here are finding that that's that's one of the parts that they're having real trouble with in the negotiation levels. I'd be interested in what your experience is with that.
The issue of rights is seen as controversial to some people because they don't understand what rights are included, what rights are excluded. I think that the way we need to frame it is that one cannot guarantee services to any individual in any country unless that service is backed up by the person having the right as a rights bearer to those services. And I think this is why we're saying it's an important part of what we need to be doing. Part of it is actually dialoguing with people what the rights should be, what they mean, what they don't mean, but also having a very honest discussion with people about, is there any justification for excluding anybody from the international human rights instruments, whether it's social rights, political rights, cultural rights, economic rights. We feel very confident and comfortable, certain economic rights, but not really very comfortable with political rights or even civil rights. And what we're saying is you can't separate them. They're all integrated and interdependent. From the West, they're very comfortable with individual social and political rights to certain limits, but they're very uncomfortable with the notion of economic rights and the rights that countries enjoy. So the rights in the R and SHR for us is one of those rights that we fight for because it accrues services to people, it saves people's lives, but it's the same kind of things that we'll talk about, economic rights and the rights of countries to be in control of their own resources. These are all part and parcel of what we debate in the UN system, and we can't actually seek to exclude some of these rights at the expense of others.
For a long time, I actually preferred the formulation talking about sexual reproductive rights instead of saying sexual reproductive health and rights, because my understanding is that the right to health, you know, you have a right to health. So that is part of the big spectrum when we talk about rights. And I think we need to look at it from a very comprehensive point and look at all the different things that we mean when we say rights. And Zane was right. I think that there has been a lot of paranoia in many of our countries around the issue of rights. And we need to get to a point where we unpack this and help policymakers especially understand exactly what we mean when we say rights.
Can you give me a specific example?
I think when they hear rights, they think of one or two issues only. Particularly within these circles, they think about sexual orientation and gender identity, and they think of abortion, and that's it. So everything else that comes with it, the right to health, the right to education, the right to be free from discrimination, the right to protection from inhuman treatment, torture, violence, things like that, none of this comes to mind. And I think we consequently have not come anywhere at all in making any progress on that front. Whereas we could at least have certain basic principles. I don't see how anyone can argue against the right to protection from non-discrimination. And so if we start from principles like that, I think we'll get a lot more people on board. And when it comes to young people's issues, you realize that even within this so-called movement, there are times when people are supportive of women's rights, but they do not think young people should be having sex, for instance. So you realize that there are very interesting dynamics and differences of opinion within that. And that is why we need to have a space where we talk about this in some more detail. Look at exactly what are we talking about when we say we're talking about rights. What does the rights-based perspective mean to everyone, and what does it include? And only when we do that will we be getting anywhere close to some kind of consensus, because as it is now, they hear rights and get into panic mode. And every year, whether you attend the Commission on the Status of Women or Commission on Population of on Development or any of these other UN processes, whether you're in Geneva or in New York, you realize that the same discussions happen every year. And I think it is to some extent quite frustrating that we are not making any progress on that front.
My final question is about African countries having the highest maternal mortality rate for young women in the world, and then at the same time, an enormous amount of resistance to SRHR being included in the post-2015 development framework. Why is that?
We have the highest mortality rates because we have no commitment to the rights. If you have the rights, from the rights you derive services and commitment to implementing the services. So our maternal mortality and morbidity is extremely high because of a number of reasons. One is, it's the fact that a lot of the morbidities and mortalities are linked to the consequences of unsafe abortion. So the problem is not safe abortion. Safe abortion under the right conditions saves lives. Unsafe abortions actually results in massive bleeding, all sorts of illnesses, and very often death. So that is one of the complications. The other kind of complications linked to maternal mortality is the link of HIV and AIDS. Again, you can see there's what we call an intersection between all of these issues. So when you talk about reproductive health and rights, you must talk about AIDS, protecting AIDS and contraception. That's why we talk about modern means of contraception, is dual contraception, to prevent pregnancy, but also to prevent STDs. Maternal mortality is also a problem because of the health systems, lack of investment in health systems, and that links into the bigger issues, that we're not going to be able to get these kind of systems in place if we are not able to get the resources to do this. And I think that's the big bugbear of African countries as well. Then we are also denied the ability to mobilize our own resources because we are not in control of the resources that we have internally. It's always circumscribed by one or other global financial rule or some other multinational doing the extraction or taxation moving out of the system. So these things are all interlinked. So they all actually, what we do, compound the problems of maternal mortality. And that's why when we tackle them, we've got to tackle them in their entirety. We cannot talk about the rights and the services without talking about what we need to do to make sure that we can mobilize our own resources. And we're not talking about donor funds. Donor funds is one component of it. And I think there's almost the same paranoia that some of us have about rights in the country in the globalized West. When they hear the words funding and resources, they think that we are asking for money. We're actually not. We're asking for changing the rules so that we can take control of our oil resources, our coal resources, our gas resources, and use it for the development of our own countries in a way that makes sense. So I think all of those issues then compound why we have such huge maternal mortality rates.
Did you want to add something to that?
Yes, I think it's also interesting when you look at the fact that that paradox extends to the ones who are opposing any talk on abortion, for instance, are the same ones who do not want young people to have access to any kind of contraceptives. They're also the same ones who have high rates of child marriage and things like that. So it is a very complex thing. But I think at the root cause is really commitment. Commitment to ensuring that the people, whether they're young or old, whether they're living in a rural place or urban place, regardless of their religious background or their sexual orientation, that all these people have the same access to dignity and access to the same rights.
As a final note, since today was really about ensuring that SRHR gets into the development framework, what is for you the main priority going into the next month?
Look, I think the main priority is in the short term to ensure that we don't seek to change the 17 targets that have been identified, because we had lots of negotiations to get at least acceptable language on reproductive rights. That's our minimum. What we need to do as a priority is to look at those indicators, to look at how do we refine them to ensure that they also begin to benchmark issues about delivery. For example, comprehensive sexuality education is a key component of any comprehensive sexual and reproductive health rights agenda. So you can't actually do it properly without CSE. And I think those are the kind of issues we must look at. Unsafe abortion as a target must be dealt with. That we must have, you know, one of the indicators must talk about reducing maternal mortality and morbidities linked to unsafe abortion. And I think that for me is a minimum in terms of the SRHR agenda.
I think that the 17 goals provide a very solid basis in my ideal world. There will be an opportunity to open up a bit to include some more issues of young people, because I feel that we have not really succeeded in prioritizing youth in the new framework.
Mr. Kisi, Mr. Dangor, thank you so much for the time.
You're welcome.
Thank you, and you're welcome.